How do you trade a trade war?
Investors were not at all expecting the more recent trade tensions that came up just a few weeks ago.
And the Fed releases minutes of its last meeting. The focus, stubbornly low inflation.
So what people will be looking for out of these minutes is, how did the rest of the Fed's rate-setting committee approach the inflation dynamic?
Plus, Huawei fights back. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story this morning, just how investors are coping with ongoing trade tensions between the U.S. and China, here's what you missed. Huawei has denounced U.S. actions against the company as bullying. Huawei's vice president for Europe, Abraham Liu, asked Europeans to resist American pressure to blacklist the company.
The challenge from the current U.S. administration by lobbying the government or our customers themselves in Europe is unprecedented. But I firmly believe our stakeholders in Europe and our customers in Europe, they are going to make their independent decision. They have their own value judgment.
Europe is one of Huawei's most important international markets. Along with the Middle East, it generated more than a quarter of its revenue last year. And the U.S. is preparing measures ranging from criminal charges to sanctions against people it believes to be involved in Venezuela's military-run emergency food program. It's part of an effort to target what U.S. officials describe as a large-scale money laundering operation that's run by the government. The government of Nicolas Maduro has said that this is a smear campaign. But more than 50 countries, including the U.S., recognize the opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's president. And that is the sound of protesters who took to the streets in Indonesia after an official vote count showed that the current Indonesian president, Joko Widodo, comfortably won re-election. Mr. Widodo won 55.5% of the more than 154 million votes cast in the world's largest Muslim-majority nation last month. Although Mr. Widodo is relatively liberal, during the campaign, he tacked rightward in order to win over a population that's showing signs of embracing a more conservative form of faith. However, his opponent, Prabowo Subianto, a former army general who's latched on to more conservative causes, is protesting the result. More demonstrations are planned for today, and the U.S. Embassy has warned of a heightened risk of attacks. Now, our main story this morning. How do you trade a trade war? It's a previously abstract question that's becoming more pressing for investors as U.S.-China trade relations fray. Charlie Turner has been speaking to our reporter, Michael Wistorn, about what he's been hearing from investors.
Mike, first, have investors here and abroad been prepared for this trade spat? It's been going on for about a year.
They haven't been prepared. Ever since we got into 2019, there was this optimistic note within the market that investors were increasingly pricing in a positive trade resolution. So, markets, by the time we got into May 1st, we were up 17%. A portion of that was because investors were expecting no more hiccups from trade, a resolution with China at some point, and for all of this to be behind them. You know, 2018 was just sort of in the rearview mirror for a lot of these investors, and the trade tensions were really there for them. So investors were not at all expecting the more recent trade tensions that came up just a few weeks ago.
So obviously, to begin, one way investors are adapting is, limiting their exposure to China.
Yeah, there's some obvious stocks that investors know have, whether it's their supply chain that has a high exposure to China, or it's the revenue that they're generating has a high exposure to China. That's sort of the quickest way an investor can see whether or not there is a trade risk within their portfolio. So some of the names that come to mind would be obviously a company like Apple, for instance, Google's parent company Alphabet's another one with it. Does have some exposure to China. So those are companies that investors, you've seen with some of the price declines, those are some of the biggest price declines we're seeing because investors are realizing that there's a risk there. And as long as there is a risk there, they don't want to be exposed to that. So that's probably the most go-to way for a lot of investors to say, do a simple screen of their stocks and to understand where is my trade concern.
You also write that foreign investors are selling down for instance, stocks that are listed on Shanghai or Shenzhen stock markets.
And that was one of the surprising developments, because foreign investors weren't that big of sellers of stock throughout much of this year. So obviously, when trade tensions really started to come up, foreign investors got pretty skittish. And that goes to show that between 2018 and 2019, investors were just sort of trying to get a handle on this whole situation. You know, 2018 was just a very bad year for a lot of Asia's markets, especially those in China. And investors were looking a bit more optimistic at the prospects for 2019, especially if trade was going to be resolved. With that not being the case, I mean, you know, those foreign assets are going to be some of the first that investors are cutting from then.
What about flight to safety, Mike? What are investors steering their investments toward as they shun others?
So investors do want to look for some of these, say, buffers within their portfolios. One big money manager, UBS Group, has been recommending that investors increase their holdings of treasuries going forward. And that's just because they're expecting that, you know, as long as there is a trade risk, that you'll see investors sort of moved out of equities into assets that tend to be a bit more durable during times of economic distress. Plus, we've seen during these points of higher trade tensions, bond yields actually go down. So that helps prices a bit.
You also write that another piece of advice investors are taking or thinking about taking is sit tight.
And that's really, I think, the most common thing I at least heard from a lot of money managers and those that were financial advisors for clients is that, you know, this is a very volatile situation where almost week to week we're back in this phase of either tit-for-tat rebuttals or tweets from one side or another just sparking bouts of volatility. And investors don't really know where this ends. I mean, we have a G20 meeting coming up where there's going to be some further negotiations, but there isn't a strong sign in the market that this is going to be the end of this at this point. So, you know, with just trade tensions sort of on the minds of investors, there are a lot of money managers encouraging investors to just ride this out, that if you have a diversified portfolio, meaning basically you got a good mix of equities and bonds, you should be able to handle a 3-5% drop in the market, especially when we're up 17% coming into April. Right now, we're up 15% right now, but that's still a very strong gain for the S&P 500. So no money managers are really losing it just yet.
You can find all of our coverage of the twists and turns and unexpected consequences of the trade war with China at WSJ.com. On to markets. It was a terrible Tuesday for U.S. retailers after JCPenney, Kohl's, and Nordstrom all reported declines in same-store sales for the first quarter. Shares in Kohl's fell more than 12%, and JCPenney's shares were down by 7%. From Hong Kong, our markets editor, Quentin Webb, says that part of what's hurt retailers is trade.
So China was the big story at the center of the terrible Tuesday for retailers, with Kohl's, which imports about a fifth of its goods from China, saying that it would need to cut its guidance for the year, partly because of the costs related to extra tariffs. Tariffs are a bit of a headache because you've got to think about how you retain sales. So you can either absorb some of those costs yourself by shrinking your margins, or you can kind of ask some of your suppliers to change where they source their goods from. So you bring in more goods from Vietnam or other countries that are not subject to tariffs, or you demand that your suppliers in China cut their prices, or you just raise prices and hope that consumers keep buying, or you do some sort of clever thing where you spread the price increase across a wider range of products so you don't have a big sticker shock. So it's just a really complicated series of decisions for retailers and the people they interact with to make.
And now, the SCED. Here's what to look forward to later today. The Federal Reserve will release the minutes of its last meeting at 2 p.m. Eastern. While the discussions from that April 30th, May 1st meeting might be a bit stale, at that time it seemed as if the U.S. and China had a trade truce, there are other aspects that will be of interest to investors. From Washington, Nick Timmerosch has more.
This will still be a really interesting set of minutes because the other big focus at the Fed meeting on April 30th and May 1st was around this problem of inflation being lower than Fed officials had thought it would be. And it has been a real puzzle. And if you go back to that meeting, there were a couple of Fed officials that had been talking about the possibility of cutting rates maybe later this year, even if it looked like inflation was proving to be more stubborn below the Fed's 2% target. And Chairman Powell really pushed back against kind of market expectations of a rate cut at his press conference. He did that by repeatedly referring to the recent softness in inflation as transient or transitory. And so what people will be looking for out of these minutes is, how did the rest of the Fed's rate setting committee approach the inflation dynamic at this point in time?
And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is facing growing calls within the Democratic caucus to impeach President Trump. That's something she'll address at a meeting today. Here's Democrat Steve Cohen from Tennessee.
I see a lot more people that believe that impeachable offense has occurred and would like to see an impeachment inquiry. They'd also like to see, as Speaker Pelosi would, that all the committees of jurisdiction proceed and get all the information they need.
Mrs. Pelosi has so far fended off impeachment requests for months, saying that President Trump was goading Democrats. But the decision by the president to block his former counsel, Don McGahn, from testifying has angered members of the party who say that President Trump is obstructing their inquiries. Finally, despite some high-profile young tech CEOs, Mark Zuckerberg and Evan Spiegel might ring a bell here, we've crunched the numbers and found that just 6% of S&P 500 CEOs are under the age of 50. That's a percentage that's more than halved since 2009. In fact, now the average age of a CEO is 58. So we want to know, what do you think is more important when considering someone for the top job? Battle-tested experience or a fresh perspective? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcast or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.